Tonight, we will be talking with noted astrologer Michael St. Clair about the future. He's next on Coast to Coast AM. Michael St. Clair, author of The Light Seeds, Futures of Planet Earth, his astrology forecasts offer a review and overview of the years ahead. He was born in Switzerland in 1959, studied law and political science at Zurich University before becoming a self-taught astrologer at age 25. He served as assistant to a Swiss Army intelligence general, and later, after a short career in investment banking, he traveled the world advising high-level clients of all walks of life in special situations. Here he is on Coast to Coast Day. Hey, Michael, how are you?
How are you doing, sir? Good to hear your voice.
Good to hear you. I'm glad you got out of the investment banking business after this debacle that's happening around the planet these days, huh?
Yes. Well, I saw that coming, and that was a long time ago. And I said to my colleagues, this is not going to end well, you know.
No, and you were right about that. Michael, how did you get involved in astrology from the kind of background you've had?
Well, I used to do this as a hobby from a very early age on, and I kept it to myself because in the early days, that was, say, in the 70s, this was still looked at as a sort of a non-serious type science or art. But I knew that there was a way one could calculate planetary alignments and mirror it to the events going on as far as mundane political astrology was concerned. But I also knew it was mirroring the behavior of people, and I was trying to figure out a way that was more rational to explain it when I actually already knew that one can just read it even without the planets. So it's something that I studied all along. It was like a hobby.
When you got out of the investment banking business, did you see that because of your just knowledge of the financial business, or was it your astrological abilities that helped you?
Well, it was both. You see, on the one hand, it was very simple. I would just see what's going on around me, and I knew what was going on around in the world because the way I was placed, I knew a lot about what went on in business and in politics all over the world. So just looking at what was transpiring was enough to extrapolate at a linear logical level of what would be happening. That's kind of like knowing a few chess moves ahead, what more or less options you have. But knowing the astrology was helping me to compare what was really going on, so I could take a bigger picture view, and I would see 10 years from now, 20 years from now, we have about this following picture unfolding. So it was both. It was always both. I would always compare one with the other. I never actually trusted astrology, even to this day.
Really?
Honestly, oddly enough, I know astrology inside out. I mean, I can do it in my sleep, sort of. But I always look at what's going on to be sure I'm really looking at the surreal picture that we're all looking at. And it's hard to explain, but it's just there. You just look at what surrounds you, and that makes you a seer. And you don't need to think about it. You don't need to actually process it logically. You just look at what's around you, and then you see and you know immediately without thinking.
Are you also a psychic? Do you have intuitive abilities, or do you believe it's just the astrology that gives you the strength you have?
It's both. It's definitely that I am what you would call psychic, or what I call a seer, in the sense that I have this awareness with me almost since I was, say, 5, 6 years old. I can remember that I was aware of, say, what you call past lives or things no one around me could understand, mentally speaking. And so I began looking into it and fine-tune what I saw and how I seemed to do it, because I wanted to know what I'm actually doing, until it was becoming clear to me that it was not me who was actually doing anything. It was just happening. And so I foresaw the trends by watching what surrounded me, as I explained. And like you would watch, say, a car driving, and you know the direction it has and the approximate speed it has, you know what the car does next. So there was nothing really more to it, but you can call it psychic in the sense I would, for instance, know if there would be an airplane accident, or just little things that as a kid would go into my mind's eye, like pictures, like situations, and then these situations would happen, say, a few days later, or then sometimes a few months later. So I was trying to figure out, why do I see certain things a few days or a few months beforehand, etc. And so I was becoming aware that some other force other than myself was also working with me in some sort of a silent dialogue, almost teaching me how to actually see clearer and with more intent, as opposed to just see like a random kaleidoscope. Was so yes, it is both psychic and astrology.
Was your family aware of your abilities even at that young age?
Yes, they were, and that was difficult because I grew up in a relatively Cartesian logical surrounding. Intellectuals, both parents are intellectuals, and everything was sort of streamlined to be, you know, in a logical mode of thinking. Everything sure. had a certain scientific sense, and I knew that that was a make-believe world, that this whole scientific type of thinking was a mask, because they were, in fact, blinding themselves to what I knew. But I intuitively knew very early on not to talk about it. I had a friend, someone who looked after me as a little kid, who taught me early on, don't speak about what you know. But she used to say to me, what you see is more real than what the others around you can perceive.
But she told you, keep it to
yourself.
So I knew
early on immediately not to speak about it.
Yeah, probably was good advice, I would think. Was there a trigger? Was there a major event at that young age that started this?
No, I can't remember an event as such. It was probably more when that dialogue came in with that force I was telling you about, when I was starting to become aware that I'm actually not alone here doing this, that I felt better about it, because I knew I had what I would call friends out there who would sort of not egg me on, but they would say to me in a silent dialogue that I was sort of on the right track and should continue to evolve and sort of develop that ability, that there was something there for me to continue to do and not to give up and kind of do it the way the adult world was doing it. So that led to a strange existence, which is even to this day, where you are with one foot in this world pretending to be with these people around you and operating the way they do, when you yourself know the information comes from someplace else.
Michael, tell us how you predict. What are some of your methods that you use?
Well, I have several ways when I do it at an analytical, logical level. There are both, okay? There is an analytical level. Of course, you want to understand and to follow thought, etc. So astrology is one way. That's a calculated way where you use mathematics, planetary positions, time. The function of time, of course, is then very important. And on the other hand, there is this whole psychic, what you call psychic or intuitive type of perception, where you don't doubt what you see coming in. And then there is also a linguistic level, similar to what Cliff High does at Half Past Human, but he does it very, very scientifically. I am able to actually read the thought of people and of the totality of people. So while I studied astrology on my own and I use it to the best of my ability, I also look at the language and the thought patterns of people, because I can read it, and that too gives me then a clear indication of what is going on and what will transpire. And in addition, I can see then also headlines in yet-to-be-published news that gives me sometimes an ability to understand what would come in. But that's where it gets tricky. Sometimes it's also wrong. I'm not always 100% right. So then in addition to that, I use, of course, simply relatively deeply placed information sources to understand what they're actually working on. And like I said, at that level, all of this is very analytical. And then I synthesize the whole thing via a sort of pattern recognition. And the guidance I use is inherent also, because I often have to ask this guidance actually what I see, what this actually means. It's not often clear to me what it actually means. I just see pictures and situations. And this guidance, when one can call it a guidance, is the same that is used by the Nordics, who are to some extent work with me, and who then later showed me what I'm doing and how I can better and more effectively develop this whole thing into some sort of, one call it an art or a science.
And this is where it gets fascinating, because you say that you are part of an ET force on planet Earth that is, as you just mentioned, the Nordics. Tell me about this, this relationship, who they are, how this happened for you.
Yes. Okay. The Nordics are part of, I would say, of an off-world intelligence, which is part itself of a cosmic operating system guidance. Okay. So our essence soul is the core of the cosmic being, and we don't really know what that is. And from my awareness, I would say we are all time travelers, and so are the Nordics. And so the essence is non-linear in time, but it's all-encompassing. And they are what one could call light beings. Some call them shining ones. They can, however, take human form. They could actually pass in broad daylight for humans. There are scientists who have dealt with them inside of the United States. They call them P-52 Orions, I believe. They have different names. But anyway, they operate in an unseen way. And their interest here is more to help some people to evolve at a more, let's say, developed techno-spiritual level. And they are a force that is helping to make people understand that they actually have very highly advanced genetics, and that we should be using all the genetics we are given, because we're operating here at a very reduced level, unfortunately. Yes. When we are able actually to work at, say, let's compare it with a car. We're using 2 of 12 cylinders, briefly said, you know. And so the Nordics are showing how we can activate the other cylinders if we want. But they do this from the background and in a very elusive way, and they don't interfere, you know.
And how long have they been doing this here?
I don't know, to be honest. I would think for, I don't know, tens of thousands of years. They're very evolved. And but they have taken, they have, how should I say, withdrawn. They have more or less withdrawn now from the whole picture. They don't see this going very well.
Do they think of themselves as failing on this planet, or have we failed them?
That's a very interesting question. I never thought of it in those ways. I don't know what to say. I think they, I don't know how to say, I can't speak really for them. Yes, they feel to some extent, one could say we have failed, but they don't wouldn't say it like that. They would say we have the ability to fix the things we're doing wrong and to change our behavior. So essentially they're saying if we can move out of thought and still down the noise in the mind, in the brain, then intelligence kicks in instead. And they're suggesting we use the inherent given intelligence of the human being, and then immediately the solutions will come to us, such as, you know, the new way of using energy, anti-gravity, at a whole technological level. They're highly advanced, technologically speaking. And in terms of so-called spirituality, they just see the whole cosmology in a totally different way. So their job, I could say, would be to empower humanity, to help people empower themselves. And as I said, they have somewhat withdrawn because there's not much they can do. It's us. We have to do it, you know. No one else can do it.
So they really feel as if they've done as much as they can?
Yes, pretty much, for the moment, yes.
Do they come from other planetary systems, or are they dimensional creatures, beings?
I would say they're dimensional, yes. They don't have, to my knowledge, some sort of a home planet or star system, no. But I don't get that dialogue with them. Also, they say it's totally unimportant. The only thing that's important to them is that we would be able to arrange our whole affairs on this planet on our own. And so I can't say, I would, what you're suggesting is correct. They're interdimensional beings, light beings.
We're going to talk about a lot of your predictions for the future and the various types of predictions, Michael. But back in the 70s, you saw things that are happening now, didn't you? Was it frightening for you then? You were talking 30 years ago.
Yes. In the late 70s, when I was just getting out of college and into university, I was about 19 or 20. No, it was not frightening. I was never, even today, when I see what's going to happen, I never developed that notion of fear. I would just see what is going on and I would see what's coming. And to me, this was like as if you would be previewing a movie. And to me, I would just have the notion of, oh, that's interesting. But I had no judgment on it, if that's supposed to be good or bad or any of that, you know. So, no, I was not frightened at all. I would just say to people, this does not work like this. It won't continue in that way, and you need to change the way you look at things, and you need to change how you act. But, no, there was never any fear.
Because there's just so many different events in the future that are so important to us, I'll just try to categorize some of them for us, Michael, and have you address them to see if you've seen anything. And in terms of looking out, all right, so we talked about a 30-year glance into the future. Do you go even farther out than that sometimes, past 30 years, maybe 40, 50, hundreds of years out into the future?
Yes, yes. Actually, I'm very interested in the longer shot because it's when you see much further in or out that you can actually calculate backwards. So far, I can say I have about a view, let's say, into the year 2200. Let's say about a little under 200 years away. And I can take you through this in an astrological way. There is one very, very important alignment that will be Uranus and Neptune conjunction in Aquarius. That's at the year 2160, more or less. That is a point when we reach another form of economy that is more breezy, air, high-tech, space-based, and knowledge-based. And then when you take it down in the cycles of the planets, you come down to 60 years, 40 years, 20 years. So my next checkpoint, I've always said in my writings and to the people I advise, is not 2012 at all. It's 2020 when Saturn and Pluto are together. That's when the economy kickstarts again. And then the next point would be 2050, 2049, 2047, when there's a very important Uranus-Pluto opposition. So those are these big checkpoints that one would look at as an astrologer.
So you don't
so
see
I'm
the world...
used to looking far away. Yes, sorry.
You don't see the world economy jumpstarting again for at least another 11 years.
Yes, that's right. That is very simple to understand. Any financial, economic astrologer knows that. The cycle we're in, that is now regardless of what goes on in politics, etc. I mean, it's then compounded due to even worse factors at the moment. But just if everything was equal, then it is normal that we're in a downturn now until about 2020. So, yes, we are in a 11-year downturn for sure. We will not come out of this recession, so-called recession, in which we have really been for more than 40 years. You know, when you live on credit as a society, you're technically in a depression. But anyway, we will be out of what we're into now in about 10, 11 years. That's right. So this will last quite a while.
Any spikes along the way, Michael, where we kind of get out of it or we feel a little better about it before it goes back down again?
The way? Yes, sure. There will be spikes. There's one coming up right now. For instance, in the next 6 months, there will be a feeling, but that's an illusion, okay? There'll be a feeling. That's not a fact. A feeling of a sort of a elated type hope, you know, words like hope and future and stuff like that. That's with Jupiter, Chiron, Neptune in Aquarius. There will be a feeling of things are going to look better or get better, etc. And yes, it is possible that at that point prices go up, commodities go up, gold, of course, goes up in value, etc. The only thing that's going to be falling is the dollar. But there will be a feeling that one could have a spike up. But it's meaningless when set against the backdrop of everything else that is supposed to unfold now.
A
so
false
I'm talking
illusion.
Now bigger cycles, you understand?
Absolutely. Now, in this 11-year period, what is it that gets us out of this situation, Michael? Hold on. We'll be right back with you in just a moment with our guest, Michael St. Clair, astrologer, futurist. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Hey, we've got that free newsletter for you. It's called Coast Zone. All you have to do is just sign up for it. It's an e-newsletter. It comes right to your computer every morning. Just go to coasttocoastam.com and click the link, register for it, and get the free Coast Zone newsletter. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Michael St. Clair with us. Michael, this 11-year period then, what gets us out of it in 11 years? What drastic change has occurred then on the planet where economically things get better?
Well, what's going to happen is that one can say the whole economic political situation is a function of the Earth's changes. We have to address this now very quickly because what is going to happen in the next few years, we cannot pretend that this is not happening, okay? That's very important. Are going to be a series of climate, weather changes, sea level rises, etc., and all sorts of changes. There's so many to mention, you know, volcanoes, earthquakes, etc., this whole stuff, but those are the outer changes. They, of course, create a whole new platform for a different kind of economy. But what really gets us out of it, to answer your question precisely, is then our own behavior, our recognizing that we have been really somewhat misguided in the way we were handling our relationship with the planet. And as this whole awareness kicks in, and as the hyperdimensional shift, the magnetics, etc., changes, we will realize that we have to do things differently, and this will create a new economy that is basically moving away from an acquisition Earth-type economy that we have had in the last, say, 200 years, particularly the last 50, 60 years, into a more knowledge-based economy, and that lifts us out of it. So you're looking at about the first 10 years that we discussed, but really at another 50, 60 year, a double cycle of Saturn, first into 2020, mm-hmm. when Pluto and Saturn make the conjunction. And then, logically, always after Saturn passes Pluto, it picks up and goes upward. So that's the first phase. And then into, say, 2049 and then 2080. So these changes, when we talk now about climate, world events, which are due to climate, because that's linked, of course, not necessarily by cause and effect, but it's like the stream picks up speed, gets very strong, consistent, and just at the moment before it drops over the waterfall is when it like takes its real form. So you look at changes really primarily of an inner nature and of a kind of inner Earth changes that goes in hand with, you know, volcanoes and stuff like that. And that will potentially reduce food production and global resources. And so the flooding and the increasing rainfall and winds and the cooling of the planet, the heating of the planet, the extremes, all of that stuff, coastal events, winds and sea level rises, etc., all that creates a catalyst for complete change, human change that translates into economic, societal, and then political change.
And I assume it will be a strong change for many, many years to come after that.
Yes, yes. We're entering a completely new landscape. And this begins right away. We actually have entered. People have a tendency to always say, well, what will be? Because they like to look into the future. They like to not look at where they're at now. But if we look at where we're in now, we are in it. We have begun these changes. It's not well reported, but there are already massive waves, very strange phenomena in the oceans going on. They're a little bit underreported because it's not happening in areas where we have a reporting structure in place, but it's ongoing. We have heard in Maine there were a few strange phenomena with waves in France several times, in the atolls, in Papua New Guinea, etc. So this is really happening. This is in the process of going on and becoming stronger over the next, say, 4 or 5 years. And this year now, 2009, is actually one in which we have had enough preparation time to know that there's potential flooding coming.
Well, in this country, Michael, we have had what we call earthquake swarms, 500-plus earthquakes at Yellowstone National Park, which is sitting atop a super volcano, a caldera, and if that thing ever goes, God help all of us. But we are in a very active state right now with this planet, aren't we?
Yes, yes, we are. I would like to say about that caldera, I do not see that one going. That's not what's going to happen. I mean, if that would happen, in theory, you can imagine that would be like nuclear winter, and that I know
absolutely
will not happen. I can say pretty safely sitting here in Germany. That is not part of a timeline that I know of. There will be quakes, sure, and there will be volcanoes, you know, smaller type, still big, I mean, still very devastating, but not of that magnitude. Move away. I mean, I would advise people that they should be at least outside of a radius of, say, 100 to 200 miles away from that place.
Will there be earth changes to the point where wars will be fought over, let's say, the shortage of drinking water or landmass, for example?
Yes, that's the whole point. The conflicts that are beginning now, that have begun, are already based on water, on simple resources. Yes, those are resource wars. Absolutely. What you see going on in the Middle East is a typical resource war. And so that will become stronger and stronger into the next 4 to 5 years. And the earth changes will create migrations of people, waves and waves of immigrations into several areas. Europe will be a target. Where we are here, we know that we're going to become a target for people from the east, from the Middle East, to move in. Same situation in your continent. And these migrations lead to, of course, a form of social unrest, and that creates conflict. So, yes, you're looking basically at resource wars. What we have so far, self-created wars, but then will come wars that are a logical consequence of the scarcity of food and water and simple things.
Michael, what about innovation? Will we continue on this planet to create new and innovative things? You know, will we get to a point, for example, where we don't rely on gasoline for cars? Will we come up with other innovations to use electrical power, maybe grab it like Tesla wanted to, right out of the atmosphere? Will those things happen?
Yes, absolutely. This is now part of the positive consequences of everything that is going to happen. We could have had that 60, 70 years ago. This was suppressed, of course. But now is what's going to happen. These so-called black operation military projects that are sitting on it will be released. And people anyway have the knowledge. There are scientists, young people around worldwide who have solutions. They just know that at the moment it's not ready, so they're sort of hiding and tinkering away in garages and stuff. But definitely there will be a new form of electrics, a new form of a cosmic energy. So yes, sure, we will replace the entire way we are dealing with energy production and consumption, and that is very soon. That is about to happen within the next 2 to 4 years. I mean, by this happening in 2 to 4 years, that the beginning of the development will become visible, and then over the next 10 to 15 years, we'll be really applying it at a massive scale. Yes.
How about our quest to go into space? Will we do this continually, and will we come across things that we have only imagined, for example, like finding the possibility that there was life on Mars and things like that?
Yes, well, you know, in the black operation world, it's going on. Of course it exists,
yes,
and we are on Mars, and you know that we have civilizations there and on the moon and on other places. I don't think that we will be in the next 10, 20 years continuing this so much, because we'll have other problems here to solve first. And space travel really in the future will be done through time travel. So it is not that we go from a point A to B in some sort of a vehicle. There are other ways to do that. That's typically something that the Nordics know a lot more of. And these things will kick in later, I would say, in about 20 to 40 years. That will be the next generation that will do that.
But you believe we have civilizations now on the moon and Mars just hidden away there?
Yes, sure, of course, yes.
I mean, how long have they been there?
I don't know. I mean, if you take the idea of Arthur C. Clarke, that there is a civilization who put a monolith on a place to see how the monkeys are doing, I mean, you remember the story, Space Odyssey.
Yep.
Then who knows, maybe millions of years, you know. I don't know. Honestly, I don't know the answer. But of course we have civilizations everywhere, on many planets and on other solar systems. And all these planets are, how should I say, they are inhabited by humanoid species. And this is the point that people need to understand. We are all, the whole planet and the whole solar system, the galaxy, are currently entering a new cycle, of which the key point is 2013, 2014, which will unfold, however, only over the next, say, 80 to 120 years. And the whole humanoid race, that means humans on Earth and off Earth, all races, they are like a group of salmons returning to their spawning grounds.
Yeah.
So this is not an individual event of enlightenment. This is a whole planetary event affecting all of us, like in the same way that salmons have to move together upstream. So the change in these cycles is not a racial one. As such, it is a planetary, or rather interplanetary, change, and it also affects the off-world civilizations, which, as I said, they're all humanoid. So some of the off-world races in this solar system are related to the planetary Earth humans in the same manner as, say, Americans are related to Europeans. And the transition we face that includes all these changes we see happening, including societal climate changes, etc., one could say in the analogy, the waters of this river that the salmons are swimming through to return to the point we left at collectively, say, 36,000 years ago, because those are the cycles. They're about 36,000 years. So of which we're now coming to the end, and this end is what people talk about with a lack of vocabulary as the last days or the end of times. When literally speaking, like Krishnamurti said, this is the ending of time, which means the ending of thought. So in some way we return to the spawning ground, which is the return to our own humanity.
Michael, tell us how astrology works. I mean, I've always been fascinated with just the mechanics behind it.
Okay, the mechanics are simple, that the planets have motion, so speed and motion is what then defines actually time. They go into certain positions in line of certain fixed stars and certain constellations. This can be measured and can be, it's very predictable, like a clock. It's the clock of the cosmos, the clock of destiny. And based on studying the alignments that are very cyclical, you can then compare that to what is going on here on Earth in terms of politics, economy, human behavior, etc. And then from there, you extrapolate, and that's where it becomes not really precise and more intuitive. You can then, from those extrapolations, say that if certain alignments are in place, they classically mirror this type of behavior, and you can look at it, you know, thousands of years back and forward.
And your specialty is financial and political astrology, even though you do everything, right?
Yes.
With, and they're tied, you know, hand in hand. Do you see any major changes for us with, let's say, this administration change, which is going to occur shortly? I mean, will there be some upside here for us?
Yes and no. You see, what's interesting actually here as an anecdote almost is that this administration is getting sworn in at really just about the worst moment. Astrologically speaking,
it is a bad time to do it. That's true.
If I was the astrologer of these people, first of all, I would have told them, you don't just do it randomly every 4 years. Sorry, at the moment when the sun is in the first degree of Aquarius, that's typical human behavior that does things logically. And when you would actually behave with the planets, then you would say, well, that day is not really good because the moon is void, of course, does not apply. Mercury is retrograde. You're within 5 days of a solar eclipse, etc. So he has at least three deal breakers. One of each is, you know, not good. Each one is good enough to bode ill for the whole venture. You put those three together, it's not a good time. So now one could say it's because of that that it won't work, but this is not the way I look at it. It's simply that the new administration, which is in reality the same administration as the last, say, 40 years, it's the same people, same structure, same Federal Reserve. I mean, you know all that.
Oh, yeah.
So this whole administration is simply going to attempt, with a few new faces and a lot of old faces, to hold together the status quo. So this to them is more important than to actually solve the problems or even address the underlying issues. So that in itself is a mandate for failure by July 2010. So by the middle of 2010, this whole thing comes unglued, astrologically speaking, and also in human logical terms when you progress it. So the astrology now dictates that we would have a radical change that is required, and that the business as usual approach will just not cope with what is coming within the next, say, 4 or 5 months, let alone 2 to 3 years. So what I'm saying is that things cannot go on as they were done before, even if they want to be, say, as stupid as to pretend not to realize what's actually happening. So no, you cannot have hope in that. You see, hope is a function of the future. You always look out into the future and say, oh, I hope that this will change. That's not how it's going to work. What is going to change things is that people have to become self-responsible, and they have to realize in the next few months quickly that they cannot rely on systems of any kind, whether that's schools, university, you know, logistics, systems like economy, politics, government. All that's past. This is the old paradigm. It's over. So within 2 years, at the very latest, people need to become self-sufficient and self-responsible and organize their own communities. That's the future in a positive way. And said in a negative way, which I dislike talking about that, you're looking at a situation where the United States is most likely going to break apart.
You know, and we've heard this from other predictors as well. That's what's kind of frightening to me, Michael, is the fact that other astrologers or psychics are seeing the same thing.
Yes. I think they are looking at it in a logical way. You have, on the one hand, the movement that is trying to bring everything together under one roof of the so-called controllers. The problem is we don't have to look at them as the enemy, because we are the enemy. See, we're the ones who have not paid attention, and we're the ones who are not furthering our own genetics.
That's right.
So when astrologers and psychics look at this, they see the obvious. That's like saying that you see a car coming at 60 miles an hour at you. I mean, that's just saying, yeah, the car is coming, so what are you going to do about it, you know?
Yeah, you're going to stand there and watch it, or you're going to get out of the way?
Exactly. And so what's going on now is two trends, okay? So you have, on the one hand, the trend that is trying to bring everything into a one-world government or into a North American Union, kind of like we have here, the European Union, but all of this is falling apart. So you have the other trend that is a breakup into regions and localities and small communities, because in reality, once the logistics, the economy doesn't work, the currency fails within about 4 or 5 months, and the economy is toast. You have no more logistics and structures. Universities close, schools close, business closes, Wall Street is down, it's finished. You know, at that point, logically, people have to self-organize, and then politics, as it was, has nothing to do anymore. I mean, there'll be a few people in Washington legislating over themselves, but that's like children playing in a sandbox, aside from a surreality that has nothing to do with what's really going on.
You see this total collapse happening over what period? Soon?
Fast. It's beginning in a few days, weeks, immediately as the new administration is sworn in, the problems will come out. You see, they have not given the new administration the proper data of what's really happening.
No, I think you're right about that, too. They're going to walk in and go, oh, my gosh, what have we walked into?
Yes, yes. And then in a few months, it will already show. I would say that by May, end of May, early June, is when it becomes acutely clear to everyone what's going on. And
Michael,
at that point, it's kind of too late.
We're going to take this quick break, Michael St. Clair. Then we'll be right back with you for more, and we'll turn the phone lines on in a moment, too. Give you an opportunity to talk with him. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment at Coast to Coast AM.